Nope.
Oh, yeah.
Jesse, you're live.
Hello! Welcome to Blurred Radio. This is our third ever live stream. Where's my camera? Hey!
Hey!
Our third ever live stream. We've got Anders Rosted, good friend of mine since we were little, tiny, tiny infants up in Seattle. And Anders Rosted is a director. We were saying earlier before we started the stream, multi-hyphenate, director of music videos, commercials,
et cetera,
brand films,
etc.
Insert whatever, you know, thing you want to insert.
Have you ever directed?
I haven't, but that would be fun.
Like a series of curated GIF. Like, they weren't meant to be.
Proper pronunciation of GIF. I commend you.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate. I figured I had a 50-50 chance, so. It'd be funny to be like...
That should be my title, GIF director.
GIF director.
Dude, you could carve out a whole other... Our second person we talked to on Blurred was our friend, a producer, Trenton Watterson, and he is producing the first Instagram TV show.
Which is awesome. Swipe now to check out... Desert Friends.
Yeah.
Is it still going? I hope
it
it's still
is.
Going.
It is. Yeah, I know it is because he's got it in his Twitter profile. I think he's got a link to it.
He probably hasn't checked his Twitter in like...
Hey, Joel, can we move that lower third's getting a little cut off on the bottom? And it's also over me instead of Anders? Hey, I'm not Anders Rosted, but...
We'll do it live.
We'll do it live.
So, Anders, you've been working on all kinds of stuff lately, right?
Yeah, just getting across the board.
Music
the hustle is real.
And, like, traveling.
Yeah.
Just got back from... South America.
Yeah, trying to get as much play in as I am working. So
yeah.
I try to take a good month long pause every year and go somewhere on the map that I haven't been. So this year is South America.
That's important. You got a good girl for that too.
Yeah. It's partnering. So nice to travel.
Where in South America did you go?
We started in Colombia and went to probably three different cities there, and then moved over to
sampling.
Ecuador.
Was it a cocaine sample tour?
Yeah, cocaine sample
like a,
tour.
It's like a brewery
the
tour,
Medellin tour, the Narcos.
I had some friends that did that, and sounded ridiculous.
Dude, that's
I was joking, but that's
it's a real thing.
Oh, it's definitely a thing.
You gotta make your own like 4 grams and bring it home with you, like you're cooking.
Bring
cookies.
It home with you.
You bring it home.
How?
Well, not like
shove
to
it up
the U.S., but you take it back
to your hotel.
Back to the
to
hotel.
Your yurt,
right?
To Burning Man.
But yeah, we went to Colombia and then Ecuador, Galapagos Islands, which was so awesome.
Yeah,
that
dude, that's insane.
And then Peru, Machu Picchu, all that fun
nice.
Stuff.
Nice.
And then finished it up in Brazil.
Do you is traveling and seeing that kind of stuff that you've never been, environments you've never been to before, like part of what you need for creative inspiration?
Absolutely. I mean,
because some people like seriously hate travel. Like they would never want to get on a plane. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's certain trips. This was definitely one that wasn't I wouldn't call it a vacation. It was more of a adventure. You know, you're sweaty in the same clothes you've been for the past week most of the time.
Yep.
Can't speak, you know, a lot of the language at first, but it's, you know, you kind of get to access a part of your imagination that you haven't, you know, had a chance to before. So I think it definitely keeps me creatively sharp.
Awesome. Yeah.
I think it's like you have to go through some kind of rough environments and like feel like you'd be beaten down by nature.
Oh,
just,
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then make it into a movie someday.
Right. Speaking of which, well, maybe we shouldn't touch. You're working on some movie related stuff that we, I guess we'll just leave it at that, right?
Yes.
Okay, we'll leave it at that.
Thanks for coming in, Anders Rosted.
Google Anders Rosted on the daily and eventually you'll hear something that we can't talk about right now. Well, so what else is working? You music video for Martin Garrix you got going on right now? Yeah.
Yeah, that's in the mix. Just finished one for Big Boy and Fanagram. They just started a band together. So that should be, I think it's dropping this next week.
Yeah.
So that was a fun one. Really cool people to work with. And it's nice having music that you actually can listen to constantly and not get sick of. So
yeah,
doesn't happen very often.
As opposed to,
okay, let's put it this way. There's some music videos that, you know, either you're writing on or you're working on and it may not be your favorite music.
Yeah, I want you to name names. Tell us who you hate that you've worked for. No, I'm kidding. No, I totally understand. There's definitely like tracks that you're like, oh, yes, I could work on this track and feel creative.
Dave, are you leaning out of your camera, I think?
I am, because what? There's a camera. Okay.
We'll do it live.
All right, well, I'm the wrong way. There's definitely projects that you can feel creatively fulfilled on and say, yeah, I'm going to enjoy sinking my teeth into this.
Right.
I'm going to enjoy like pulling it apart and figuring out what it is and like really getting into it. And then there's others that you're like, well, there's about this much. There's this like, you can see on the video, there's like this much to it, and there's not a lot of layers to dig into, and it gets old really quick.
Well, you know, I think that's a really important trait to have as, you know, as any artist, whether you're a director or, you know, a brand consultant. It, you know, you don't always get those things that you can connect, you know, directly with, but you have to sort of really dig deep into it and find something that you can dig your teeth into and get inspired by. And it could be some like a small speck of something, but I think, you know, just like meeting people, maybe you don't connect, you know, right off the bat, but as you get to know that person or that song, you find something that you like about it. And
you know, we were talking to someone else who was saying that as he gets into a project, he if there's not necessarily a lot to work with, he sometimes has to find, he has to tell himself a story about what there is to work with. And then 6 months into the project, sometimes we'll find out that the producer or the creative he's working with had a very different idea than he did, but it wasn't clearly obvious. It wasn't easy to access.
Right.
Have you had situations where you say, well, here's my concept and here's what I think will really make this work. And they say, that's not at all what we had in mind. And
You know, I think sometimes that can actually be a brilliant surprise. You know, hoping that on the other end that they're open to changes. And I think you need to go into it, you know, especially with music videos, it's a really interesting collaboration because you're an artist and they're an artist and you're kind of, you know, meshing those two forces together. So, you know, I think it's important to respect each other's craft in that sense and be open to, you know, seeing how that evolves.
Talk a little bit about the production, or I guess really even the pre-production process of music videos, because it's really unique to music videos. And I think it's something that probably most people aren't really familiar with. So what happens? An artist wants a video. What's the pipeline?
Yeah. So like today I got a couple tracks in, and basically my rep will send me a track from the label, and they will, sometimes they'll have a brief, maybe an idea that the one of the artists had late at night and sends a couple references. Most of the time, I'd say, probably about 60% of the time, it's just an open brief and, you know, they just say go to town on it. So you get a link to the song, you listen to it a million times, you have probably 3 to 4 days to come up with the concept. You write all your ideas down, find a bunch of visuals and create a treatment that sort of leads them through this, you know, visual journey and demonstrates your concept on paper. They probably have another 8 directors that they're sending this to doing the same thing. So everyone's auditioning for this role, which is, the interesting
part.
It's
a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. And that's the thing is, you know, you'll probably get maybe, if you're really good, you get like 2 out of 10. So, you know, if you're a baseball player, that's a pretty bad batting average, but it's a lot of work for, you know, sometimes an idea comes to you in 20 minutes, sometimes it takes 2 days. And it's a really interesting process.
But for a baseball player, a really great batting average is only 4 out of 10.
Well, yeah, even 3 out of 10.
It translates well, I think, if you can land 4 out of 10 of your gigs. Yeah, right?
And sometimes too, you're under like the most, like they want a treatment back in. I mean, there have been times where I've come over to your old house in LA, and it's like I get there and you're like, oh man, sorry, I got to write a treatment, and you disappear literally overnight. You're like, you start writing something and you don't stop until it's done.
It's crazy. You know, a lot of the turnarounds are so quick that you really have to hone in on your creative process, and because the time, you know, the clock is ticking, and you have to go with an idea. So at first you kind of just fish for, you know, what really strikes you visually for the song first, and then write those ideas down. go down a path. If that path's not working, turn around and go down another one.
Where's the break even point? Where do you say like, nope, that's not the one, and turn around and go back? Do you double down and say like, no, I'm gonna make it work?
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting. It's kind of like sculpting to me, because you know, you start out with some very strong themes that, you know, all of your ideas have sort of spawned from, and then you just try to find a way to visualize some of those themes. And I think, yeah, sometimes those ideas just click, and if they don't, you just have to make those, you know, judgment calls and try something else out. So
you disappear, you come up with a treatment.
Yes.
And then you don't storyboard anything.
No, there's never time for that. Well, for example, like this last music video was, it's incredibly difficult because it was awarded on, I wrote the treatment on Thursday, sent it in. The next day they say, okay, the only day we can shoot this is next Tuesday. So I had 4 days, really 3 days, to really get a crew, bring this crazy concept to life and make it work. That, you know, and this is also assuming everyone's schedule that I, you know, want to work with is available. So, and then the other interesting part of music videos, which Jesse is very familiar with too, is you really have to turn water into wine when it comes to budgets, because it's crazy.
Right.
You really don't know until you get into it, and most people will scoff and laugh. Anyone that's done commercials, they look at these lighting budgets and they're like, "What do you mean? We can't do that."
Yeah.
So, like, give us an example. Like, what would a lighting budget be for a 3-minute video? I mean, videos, all of them are different, right? Like, if you decide to shoot, if you can come up with a concept where you shoot in like one or two spaces, or you can utilize a limited number of shots or locations, mm-hmm. that helps, right?
It does help.
But like, what is like compared to a?
In terms
can we pause for a moment? Did we lose our stream?
It's still going on. It's still going on.
We
OBS.
Lost it. Okay, we're back. I think we just went down for a sec. Weird.
Hmm. Are you up?
No, I was just listening to you guys.
So okay. Well, that was strange. Hmm. We're back now. Hey. can we jump back a minute then to, you were talking about locations?
Trying to backtrack. Where were we?
You were saying that you have to figure out how to utilize a certain, you're trying to keep people's attention for a certain amount of time.
Well, I think, the biggest thing that you really need to learn in music video production is being efficient. You don't have all day. You don't have time to storyboard. You are really, it's really like a live performance for you and all of your crew there, because you need to make such snap decisions. And, you know, all, especially the pre-production leading up to it is really one of the most important parts. So you have such a clear game plan going in, because a lot of times you'll have your client on set, you have musicians that are, you know, getting hot and, you know, they need 2 hours for makeup, and just time is the biggest factor in all of it. So, I don't know. Every music video is different, but they seem to have one common denominator, which is there's never enough time or money.
So, and your girlfriend is a producer as well, right?
She's a producer.
And you get to work together pretty often. Yeah,
yeah, and, you know,
does it break your relationship?
I'm
shambles,
so,
or is it, does
I'm
it strengthen
so surprised
it?
It actually works out really well. I think we know each other's strengths really well, and thankfully she's actually a really good producer. If she was bad, then it would it'd be a really weird dynamic. Yeah. Like,
sorry, sweetie.
I didn't have
the balls
to
plan B.
Tell you.
That's good.
But
how did you get into music videos specifically? When did you say like that's what I want to do?
Well, I think, you know, for the most part, it kind of fell on my lap a little bit. Jesse actually was my first DP on my first music video when I came out here.
Was that your first?
That was my very
first.
That's
right. Oh, yeah.
But it was so weird. I remember, because I just moved to LA, and I got an email one day from Warner Brothers Records, and I was like, what? Like, this must be spam mail. What the hell? One of the commissioners there asked me if I wanted to do a music video for one of their bands. And of course I gladly accepted, but after I did that, then it just kind of led to the next one and the next one. I've always had a passion for music and obviously filmmaking. So it's been a nice, you know, good harmony.
Yeah.
And is music video something that you're interested in doing, like, for the long term, or are there other sorts of video projects you're really interested in?
Yeah, you know, I think what I really love about music videos is you do have a lot of sort of creative freedom that you can explore, as opposed to, you know, the commercial world where you're given from a marketing director the concept and what you're shooting, and it's all focused on one product. But I feel like with music videos, you really are writing, you can write whatever you want for the most part and bring those ideas to life in, you know, a matter of a week. And I think that will never get old. You know, I think moving on, I'd like to get more selective, hopefully, with the artists that I want to work with. But I think in terms of wanting to do music videos, I think that I'll always be excited to do that.
Yeah. How is technology? Obviously, technology has just changed everything. Well, probably a huge part of the reason music video budgets have been cut so heavily in the last 10 years.
Well, and the labels.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean...
Well, no, wait, say more about that. Say more about the... We'll get into the technology, but you just kind of threw that out there, and I'm curious.
Yeah, well, you know, I think if you were to talk to any music video director, say, 10 years ago, almost all their music video budgets were over $100,000. Nowadays, you're going to see most of them fall in the $70,000 range. A lot of this has been because of the labels not getting enough money like they used to with the CD sales and record sales. Now,
there's just less money in the music business overall.
There is,
or it's spread out so wide.
It is, you know, and I wouldn't say that the music video industry is dwindling. I would say it's just kind of evolving into a different platform, because now with YouTube, it's just different streams of revenue. But I think music videos will never die, because they're always the best way to brand for an artist.
Yeah.
I heard someone tell me recently that Beyonce releases music videos as advertisements for... Oh, what did she say? He said...
For her ass?
Music videos... Music videos are advertisements for her album. Mm-hmm. And her album is advertisement for her brand.
Oh, that's a really good way of looking at it.
That's all it is, right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. And so you said you're making this distinction between making music videos and making commercials. Mm-hmm. But really, music videos are still commercials.
Absolutely. There's so many things that are similar in that sense. And sometimes I have to step back and remind myself that, you know, you're the artist, the label, they are your client in the end. You know, it's nice to live in this dream world and think, oh, okay, we're just like making art together. But at the end of the day, they're hiring you to make a branded film for them.
And so I'm curious actually whether it could go the other direction. Like, we're starting to see more brand films mm-hmm. that aren't 30-second spots. They're actually like longer narrative driven films. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you've worked on that is like a music video for a product?
I mean, in terms of something that's more than a 30-second commercial?
Yeah, that's...
Not exactly.
That's like, well, if is music
There's
videos...
There's product placements that happen, right?
That's another
how budgets can get...
That's another thing that's especially changed in the past, you know, 5 years even, is it's product placement in music videos. I mean, I'm sure all of you have seen music videos with the Beats headphones in it.
Yeah.
I mean,
her soul, or yeah, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff, man.
So I think that's, I don't know. I think it's opened doors a little bit with budgets, but honestly, at the end, sometimes I feel like they just pocket most of the product placement money, like just put no money into the video. But
have you done any work with the Kluger Agency?
No.
We should get him on Blurred. It's this guy who basically called up all the labels and told him that he could find them product money for their music videos.
Really?
And then called up all these brands and told them that he could get them placed in music videos. And he called like 400 people and finally got someone to bite. And now he runs an agency doing product placement in music videos.
Oh,
yeah. So
pounding it. Pounding pavement. Good for him, man.
Absolutely. But But it's apparently something that's really exploding, this idea of like financing supposedly financing music videos by putting product placement in it in natural ways. And some people have complained about like, yeah, this music video seems like it's more about like, let's get the shot of the product than actually showing off that. Yeah.
It's so hard because there are, you know, there are a lot of times, like I dealt with it one time where it was with a Samsung and it was like showing one of their phones, but it's so hard to do it naturally that works cohesively with your concept and not be over the top. But you know, some of the requirements are 2 seconds like of a close up or 4 seconds, and it's on there just too long where it's just
you're like, oh, this is, we officially okay, sold out,
but you're contractually obliged to have it on there for 2 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah.
Don't they realize, I always want to say, like, don't they realize that viewers would be more interested if it were artfully done, and forcing constraints onto an artful process, mm-hmm. like, it actually hurts the viewer's desire to engage with their product, because it feels like a sale.
Right. Well, I think to them, they think any FaceTime is good FaceTime, so they're like, as long as their logo's in there long enough for someone to realize it, I don't, it's unashamed.
Yeah.
Hence the reason Jurassic World got made with like 50% of Mercedes money.
Oh God! I just
like, man,
that.
Seriously, a 20-second shot of the grill? Like, you don't need that. Yeah, come on.
Exactly.
Yeah, dude, it's weird. So back to technology. I mean, you know, you and I have a couple of mutual friends who've been directors, music video directors for like decades, mm-hmm. like back in the heyday, like literally million-dollar budgets on stuff all the time. Yes. And now it's like, well, that's also part of how you broke in, right? Like you went through high school and you were an expert in After Effects by mm-hmm. the time you got out and moved down to California, and you had a skill set that couldn't have existed, you know, mm-hmm. 15 years ago, and that's how you crack in. Like, it seems like that's happening a lot more.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a really interesting generation that I'm in and we're in, because like you said, it couldn't have happened 20 years ago. I think it's almost expected now to be a jack of all trades in the sense of understanding how to edit, how to shoot, how to work with After Effects, how to color. All these things are sort of standard protocol for being a director, and having more access to all this technology, with it becoming faster and cheaper and more accessible, I think it's really, you know, really broken in the doors for a lot of directors. And I mean, I'm all for it. Of course, it's really made the market a little oversaturated because it's brought
a little.
but you know what? I'm a firm believer that, you know, the cream always rises at the top. Yeah. I think people will always pay for quality. And, you know, of course you can get someone to make a music video for, you know, half the price, but people like to expect the quality that that they know. So I think that's a big thing. But it's something to be conscious of. But at the same time, it's, you know, it shouldn't affect the way that you execute or approach, you know, your own craft. So
do you think people in general know how to recognize quality?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, that being said, that's coming from me.
Dave's very pessimistic about his fellow human race.
But well, that being said, okay.
Aren't you?
Sometimes.
Because
Donald Trump is currently the conservative nominee.
Because as I was answering that question, I got these flashes in my head of this last weekend when I was like flipping through TV and I saw that new, it's like the Jersey Shores, but for midgets.
Oh, Christ.
And
I'm just asking a question.
But like to go to that kind of pessimist perspective, I was like, wow.
Seriously? That's an actual show?
It's a show. It's like Desperate Housewives but they're all little people.
So Anders, do you trust them?
Okay, now I'm leaning a little more towards this.
No, look, here's the thing. I think it's a reasonable question, and I think it can push both ways. And the like, The two sides of the coin are this. Number one, when culture was defined primarily by tastemakers, studios, labels, TV networks, fashion labels, who controlled what the public saw and controlled how things were sold and where they were sold and for how much they were sold, there was less of a question about people trusting, about democratized sensibilities of taste or quality, right? We just did whatever the TV ad told us to do, right? But now that you can go and shoot your own video, and we're recording this thing on whatever these tiny little cameras are. I mean, we're creating a TV show, a studio TV show, right here in Long Beach in this apartment, right? And we're creating content. Now, people can disagree about what the quality of that content is.
Sure.
And I'm hoping that over time, people will recognize, oh, there is something quality here. It's like the game you used to play at camp where you had to guess how many jelly beans were in the jar. Do you know what this game is?
Yeah.
The statistical trick with this game is that the any individual may be wildly high or low, but as a group, as a herd, the group of people, the average number is almost always right on. That is, the really high people and the really low people cancel each other out. And so what I'm wondering is whether, instead of having tastemakers who work within a system and tell people what they should like, now we basically have to trust the crowd mentality and see what floats to the top. And I'm not necessarily sure that the herd mentality idea works. I'm not necessarily sure that what people will choose to watch on their own free time is necessarily well produced.
Mm-hmm.
It could be addictive.
Yeah, but ultimately it's all about what's going to give you a dopamine hit in your brain, right? Like for some people, it might be a beautiful shot on screen or a beautiful sequence of events. For other people, it might just be some really shitty, like iPhone video of like, there was a music video for Avicii recently where it's like just an iPhone, like following them around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like it's just different for different people. I don't think there's necessarily like an objective, like, this is good and this is bad. I mean, it's not
objective, but you know, for example, I think Instagram's a really good example of this because this really created a platform for people that weren't necessarily photographers before to get in touch with, you know, their photographic senses, and they started taking pictures, and all of a sudden they're, you know, they have millions of followers and are getting paid for, you know, to take pictures. And so I think it's given people more access to, you know, an exposure. I think that's a big, big thing here is before social media, you had no way of really exposing yourself or even affording these tools. But now that anyone with an iPhone can go take pictures and share it with the world, I think it definitely opens it up.
There's also a question about what the definition of quality is, right? So, like, what I always go to, you talk about Jersey Shore. Jersey Shore to me is, it's like McDonald's. Right? It's not great ingredients. It's not carefully prepared, but it's cheap. Mm-hmm. And it tastes good. And,
does it taste good?
And some people, when you're drunk. Very, very, very dude, interesting
look,
group of people.
I mean, yeah, no, absolutely. Like, there's a reason that fast food is addictive, right? Like, because whether or not, and this is the question, does it taste good? That's the question. Mm-hmm. The answer is, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. I keep eating it. I think this is reality TV, right? Like, if you're comparing it to a Mozart opera, is it good?
Right.
Well, no, not at all. But we keep watching it.
Right.
So is there something else happening that isn't necessarily a measure of quality? Or is someone's intent to purchase?
The disaster. Like, we're drawn to disasters. We're drawn, like, when there's an accident on the freeway, we pull over so we can look at the accident. People like seeing shit be fucked up.
I think
up,
you're right.
You know?
Like, because I always wondered, why would someone watch Jersey Shore?
Yeah.
And then the first time I watched it, I was like, everyone likes watching it to feel better about themselves. You just love watching this to see how ridiculous other people are. That's it. So,
wow, that's I don't
kind of makes you cry for humanity a little bit.
I like that the room now agrees with me. Jesse scoffed at me 5 minutes ago.
Did I scoff at you?
Yeah, when I asked whether he trusted whether
my
Anders trusted his
my general state
truth.
Is
just
scoffing.
General
at Dave.
Scoffing. No, it's. I think it's good. I guess the difference is asking whether quality and intent to purchase are related.
I think you bring up a good point there because, you know, anyone that eats a cheeseburger, you're filling that need of hunger. But anyone that eats a, you know, an amazing 10-course meal at a 5-star restaurant, everyone's going to say that 10-star or 5-star restaurant tastes better. But what are we going to be eating on an everyday basis? Right. That's the question.
Well, and maybe people would love to go to the opera, but can't afford it, or it's not mass produced. And well, I guess that's what you're getting with GoPro is mass produced media, right? Which doesn't make it bad. Some of it's really great.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's really interesting. So I'm not against the fact that media has been democratized, not at all. I just think it's easy for us to say, like, it's so great that media has been democratized, and then we start listing off all the things that aren't great about it.
Yeah.
Like, well, none of us have any budgets anymore.
Right.
We can't make a living at this, mm-hmm, and there's a lot of really schlocky creative out there, and the list goes on. So I guess, how do you make a priority, or how do you take it on to do good work, in spite of the fact that media has been democratized? Like, how does that change the way you make work?
I don't know.
Not at all. He's like, it doesn't matter.
Well, I know you turn down projects sometimes because you, right?
No, it is true. I mean, I think, you know, it's always important to make a goal of making whatever it is, a reflection of your judgment calls and your taste in art and making something that's, you know, worthwhile and has some sort of substance to it. So I think like you said, there's a lot of jobs that you'll get on your desk and they really wouldn't add anything to you or show any of your quality at all. So I think, I guess, just maintaining a good filter and making sure you're taking the right projects that you can give it your all and something that you can be proud of.
Yeah. What about what kind of on-set disasters have you had before?
Oh, I got some good ones.
Oh, yes.
I got two good ones. So my first one was this music video for Cascade. And
like the dish soap?
Actually, I think that's how I got it.
That's awesome.
Oh, is this a band? Is this an artist?
it's a DJ.
The dish soap. probably a dish soap.
Yeah, I think okay, fine. It's a dish soap. But we were, so I was trying to find a really good lead girl to cast for like one of the principal actors. And I found this girl. She was like on this big TV show. I was like, you know, has a good following. I was like, all right, yeah, like let's get her on this. And she was interested in the project and flew her out from Canada or wherever she was from. And she came to set that day, and it was early morning. The opening shot was all, you know, she was walking into the water, like as the sun is rising on a lake. And about 5 minutes before we start rolling, you know, my crew is like, all right, we're good to go. Like, all right, just like get her ready. So I come over to her and I was like, hey, like, can I get you anything? We're almost ready to go. Like, how are you feeling? And she just turns to me and says, I can't do this. Like, what do you mean you can't do this? She's like, I can't go into that water because if it's too cold, then I'll get hypothermia and then I will get sick for 2 weeks. I can't film on my TV show and all of this.
Oh my!
And I stood there frozen. I was like, what are we going to do? So she walked off set and her agent just like apologizing profusely. And the only other girl on set was my girlfriend who was producing it, Lauren. And we just all kind of take a minute and I look over at Lauren and I'm like, can you try on that dress? So she did the opening shot. And then while we were shooting that, I'm like racing. It was like 6:30 in the morning and I'm calling all these, you know, any friends or models that I knew that could like do the rest of the project. And thankfully I found one in the next 2 hours that we met at the next location to shoot the rest video.
Oh my God.
So that was one disaster that could have been turned to crap. But the other one,
dude, thank God for your girlfriend,
it comes through in the clutch. The other one was for this band called the Royal Concept, and we were We're shooting the final scene, which was all of these like Chinese lanterns being lit off into the sky in downtown LA. So we went to, I don't even think anyone that we even knew lived at this apartment building, but we found a rooftop and we just all went up there. It's probably 10 of us. And we're lighting off, it was at night, and we're lighting off all of these Chinese lanterns. And we start releasing them one by one and start shooting. And we have like probably a good 30 to 40 of them in the sky in downtown. And then about 15 minutes in, there's a helicopter and the LAPD puts on loudspeaker, like, this is the LAPD, like, this is a federal crime. Like,
oh my God.
Shining their huge spotlight on us, and everyone just scrambles, and there's like lanterns and, you know, going off to the side, like burning up. Everyone just like running down.
The funny thing is, I haven't told you this before, but I was at a park downtown LA, like a few miles away that day, and I saw that happening. And I didn't even know that it was for your video until Josh, our mutual friend called me later and told me this story. I was like, holy fuck, I'm 2 miles away at a park and I'm seeing like LAPD, like, what's going on over there? And this huge like block party, all these people like, what is that?
Well, I thought we all got away just fine, like didn't get arrested. But I thought the funniest part was next 2 days, my friend sends me a link and I click on it and it's like opening titles, UFOs over downtown LA.
Oh my God.
And he literally started this like forum page, which was like, this was this huge conspiracy that night. And he's like, see, like, why are the cops trying to communicate with the UFOs and just...
Dude,
craziness.
That's
I've ever achieved a life goal, it's starting a UFO conspiracy.
You die happy.
Die happy.
Well
yeah.
done.
Dude, that's awesome. What do you think has been, what's like the most fulfilling part of the process for you? Like, you know, post-production is really tedious,
mm-hmm.
but I know that's kind of where you got your roots in some sense. Like, what do you, what gets you amped? When you're taking on a new project.
Yeah, you know, I think there's so much stress leading into it that, you know, that really fills up your mind and kind of, there's more anxiety filling your veins than excitement because there's just so much to get done and you want everything to be perfect and just how you imagined it. And then you shoot it and that's just, you know, it's like you're just going through a vortex and then the next day you come out of the other side. And I think my favorite part is not editing, definitely, because editing takes so much time and there's so much writing that goes on in post-production. But I think when the final product comes out, it's like after that whole hurricane that just destroyed you and your whole crew, seeing a final product in front of you that, you know, you can step back and you're like, wow, that actually turned out kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could do something that wasn't filmmaking, what would you do?
That's a good question. It would either be being a chef. I love cooking. I think it's such an art form in itself. But yeah, I'm getting hungry now.
Yeah, it's about that time.
We'll go down the street.
Get some wings.
So I'd say either being a chef or I'd be in some sort of advertising. I think just anything creative. I mean you guys know it's fun finding ways to join a brand and their ideas of getting what, you know, what they're all about across, and then coming from, you know, the consumer's end and figuring out where they meet in the middle in a creative way. I think that's always fun.
It's an addiction for sure.
Yeah.
What brands have you worked with, and what branded projects have you enjoyed working on?
So I've worked oddly on a few fashion projects for Vogue and Harper's Bazaar, and this other Ali Youn's Couture in Dubai, and I think fashion is really interesting. That I really do enjoy it because it's a little bit less focused on just this product, you know, like Beats headphones or, you know, any other thing. It's more of a, I feel like you can be a little more abstract with their branded content, where it's more of a visual poem as opposed to a 30-second commercial. So fashion has been a fun space, and of course you're just dealing with beautiful visuals and beautiful people wearing beautiful dresses. So that's been something that I've enjoyed particularly. And then, yeah, I did a few energy drink commercials last year, which were interesting. It's like one of those more of, it's like lifestyle, and then all of a sudden everyone's holding a can of energy drinks, and then you're like, it feels a little contrived at the end. It's
like, is it one of those like too many cooks get in the kitchen, yeah, sort of things?
Or? Absolutely, yeah. And it's like,
and ultimately the advertiser has their, they can shut you down.
Exactly.
Right?
Like,
no, this right. This is our brand. We need to do it.
Yeah. And they're like, this European brand is one of the worst experiences.
You can just say that the check's already in the bank.
Oh yeah, no, I've passed.
You're not concerned about getting another job.
No, they asked me to do it again this year, and I said no. It's such a bad
good
process.
Good man.
But yeah, I mean, I'm open to any brands as long as they're willing to take risks. I think it's always fun.
Are there, what brands out there are doing that besides ones that you've worked on? What brands do you look at and say, or actually I'll throw music videos in, what music videos are you looking at and saying like, that's really, I really enjoy that, I'd love to do that? Or they're taking risks?
Yeah, I mean, I think just off the top of my head, I'm sure everyone's, or a lot of people are familiar with it, but I love all WoodKids videos just because they're,
oh yeah man,
they
you introduced me to WoodKid.
They tell such rich stories, and they're crafted with the music in mind, and the composer actually directs all of them too, which I think really echoes when you watch it, because both of them are in such symphony at the same time. But yeah, I love WoodKid. I think what he's doing always inspires me, for sure.
He does Lana Del Rey's videos too, right?
Or he did one of them, yeah, the one in the swimming pool.
Oh, right, with alligators?
Yeah.
That
was super cool.
Yeah, that was killer. Cool, man. Well, we've been going for a while, yeah?
Yeah. Should
probably be mindful of your time.
What do you have lined up? What's coming up next?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay, good.
Yeah, I'm right now I'm finishing up a project for Facebook, doing some branded content for them.
Oh, yes, that was, I forgot. I was going to ask you.
Pretty interesting.
The Facebook AI thing.
Yeah.
What can you tell us?
Well, the video's out, so I think I can talk about it as much as we want. But yeah, basically the video kind of centers on their, well, the Facebook has a whole division of artificial intelligence, and this one particularly hit on their facial recognition feature that they've been developing. And it's so cool because the founder of this technology, he was actually, as he's talking in the video, he was the one that invented or developed the technology to where deposit your check into the ATM, it'll read those numbers.
Yeah,
this was back
in
the 80s. Mm. So he'll show this video where he's like, all these handwritten numbers are being kind of transcoded or, you know, transcribed by a computer. And that was back in the 80s. So now the advanced version of that, the evolved version, is taking facial features and starting to recognize them. So another example is where they have this camera, and it will look over at an orange and it'll say, like, this is, has 95%, you know, shape of an orange, so this must be an orange. And then it's all live detection, and it'll move over to glasses, and it's like, these have a 92% of being glasses. So you get the same thing with facial features, where the distance between eyes and nose, and you know, whether they're smiling or not smiling. So the whole video centered on that new technology and I guess making it a little less scary, because I think the word facial recognition is like, holy crap, like, you can...
Well, it just brings you back to Minority Report, stuff like that. We always think of the worst possible. I mean, I'm sure it'll be great in some applications. I've got a client who's opening a fitness center, and he's got an app, and when somebody has signed up for a class, within 10 minutes of that class, they're going to walk up, and their phone will auto-check them in. To the class, just it's a proximity thing. But like eliminating the phone entirely and just having it be like, oh, Mr. Martino walked in the door and we know that he has signed up for this class just because they recognize his face. That could be a lot of convenience. There's always a dark side to convenience, right?
What do you think the implications are for the future of humanity?
Yeah, well,
Facebook.
I think what
30 seconds, go.
It's
go.
So true. I think technology should be a way of inducing more convenience. That's really all it ever has been, and I hope that's what it will be in the future. But I think cutting all of the labor out of and complexity out of, you know, getting from A to B, whether that's trying to search for a movie at a certain time or whatever, you know, I think as long as we keep using it as an instrument for efficiency rather than letting it take over things that we can already do, I think it's still a tool.
Well, it's a question of convenience for who. It's a whole lot more convenient for advertisers to target you now because Google offers them your data.
It's true.
So it's not always necessarily convenience for the user. Sometimes it's convenience for other people.
Absolutely. Or did you hear that recent thing with Google, whoever, I don't ever use the Google voice thing, but
Google Now.
The Google Now. I guess it records all of the things that you've said into
I've heard that. Yeah. I've heard that it does, and then I've heard no, it doesn't. Okay. That's a bunch of bull. But I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, they get to record all the things that you type in. So I mean, what's different?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't see any difference. It wouldn't surprise me at all. But what's actually more worrisome potentially is the fact that because it is working off of voice recognition. Okay, Google. Stupid.
It works so flawlessly.
Because it works off of...
That's why I don't use it.
That's why... because it works off of voice recognition, when you say, okay, Google, it's got to be listening all the time.
Right.
Just like your Alexa...
Oh, because you don't have to press anything to say.
Right. Well, you're not supposed to, fucking thing. But just like your Alexa... little thing when you
Amazon
say...
Amazon Echo, yeah.
Yeah, Amazon Echo. Alexa, do this thing for me. Well, it's always listening. So if
now they have the Hey Siri, where you don't have to press anything. Yeah.
Right, Hey Siri. Mm-hmm. If it's always listening, what is it?
But it's
logging?
Also not transmitting it. It's listening. It's like
say high speed. So we think.
Right. Exactly.
And the NSA isn't tracking your phone. So heard this story before.
Right.
It's true.
But theoretically, you know, it'd be eating up an insane amount of data. Every single 4G network would be completely clogged if everything was actually being transmitted. You know, it's like high-speed cameras. Theory. You know,
I love that Jesse just thinks this is so implausible. It's like, well, that could never happen because we have cell phones and they work.
As if the NSA hasn't just built a 3G plan
would never cover that.
I mean, could they?
Yeah, exactly. As if they're not subsidizing 3G plans so that they can afford to do this.
Right. Could they? Absolutely. They absolutely could. I don't think they do, and I'm sure there's an answer out there. But you know, it's like the high speed cameras. You know, you can trigger the shot after it's already happened.
Right.
So like it's constant. Like these systems, they're constantly listening, but it's not going anywhere. It's just being processed internally. When it hears a specific phrase, trigger phrase.
Again, we hope.
We hope. We do.
What is it? Doug Kincaid said, if the CEO of a company can't say their privacy policy in public. Comfortably, it's probably not a good one.
Yeah. And he would know. This was a previous guest we had on whose favorite pastime is reading terms and conditions with candlelit terms and conditions session by himself in bed.
Doug,
so romantic.
If you're listening on Signal, swipe now. What is that? Episode 21 or 22?
I don't know.
It's 20 or 20, 20. Swipe now. It'll do it for you. We don't even have to tell you. It'll do it for you. Awesome. Well, cool.
Dude, hit us with some info about you. You're on you're on the Twitter.
Yeah, I'm on the Twitter, on Instagram. Everything's...
That sounds slightly sexual.
Tweeter.
Nice tweeter.
I'll just leave it at that.
Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
What are you? At
2 beer o'clock.
Yeah. At Anders Rostad. You can find me on all social media that with my name.
Yeah. Just Google it. Somebody in the chat room asked if you're Danish.
Actually, Swedish and Norwegian.
There we go.
There we go. Yep.
Swedish, Norwegian, Swiss, German. I mean, you know, we keep it European.
I'm like
up
Cuban,
in here.
Cuban and Italian. So I'm the spicy one in the room.
Oh man. All right. Well, Anders Rostad, dude, appreciate you. Thanks for coming all the way out of here.
Totally. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Hit us with some outro music. Bam. Are we playing outro music? You can't hear anything. Hello, we got outro music.
This is I can sing it.
Huge thanks, as always, to our producer, Michelle, for making everything happen. And for our bed's probably over now. To Joel Santos, our technical director.
To Lindsay Bruno, who's going to do all of the uploading and show noting and making sure this gets from our mouths into your ears. And also to our inimitable composer, Ian Perry, for this awesome theme that you probably already are done listening to. Thank you. We'll see you next time on Blurred Radio.
Hasta luego.